obviously we don't know what the future holds, but yes, there is a sense of being just for however long, we don't know how long, but being able to put down that burden mm-hmm. and just kind of breathe a little, live a little.
Welcome to Heart to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the host of your program. Today's episode is called The Mental Health of a Heart Mom. I always enjoy meeting heart parents face to face, but it doesn't happen as often as I would like. Since 1994, when my second son was born with a heart defect, I have met people from all over the globe who have children with heart defects. Today's guest is someone I know and have known for almost 2 decades, but I've only come to meet her face to face yesterday. Helen Simpson is mother to Alistair, Ellie, and Catherine. Alistair was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Helen first found me because of a book of essays I had put together called The Heart of a Mother. In the book, I included my email address and Helen took the time to write me a note. This was when the internet was young and before Facebook or Instagram. Today's program is very special because Helen and I are talking face-to-face. We're actually in the kitchen of the Airbnb I'm staying in Canterbury, England. So I'm very excited. Normally I use Skype to record long distance on my computer, but today I'm actually sitting in the kitchen with Helen. We've had a nice cup of tea and we are all ready to have this lovely conversation about the mental health of being a heart mom. Our patrons are in for a treat because we plan to have something special for them as well, but that will be a surprise. If you're interested in being a patron, check out our Patreon page. That's www.patreon.com, patreon.com/heart-to-heart, and sign up. For as little as $2 a month, you can be a patron and you will get certain benefits as well, depending on the tier you belong to. Now today, Helen and I will be discussing Helen's history as a heart mom and why we believe it's important for us to consider parents' mental health after a child has been diagnosed with a critical congenital heart defect. Welcome to Heart to Heart with Anna, Helen.
Hello. Yeah, I'm really pleased to meet you. It's been lovely.
Oh, we've had such a great time and I can't wait to get into this topic. I want us to start by having you tell us when your son's heart defect was diagnosed.
Well, when Alistair was 10 days old, he'd been signed off by the midwife. We'd had a midwife visit every day for his first 10 days, and he'd been signed off as healthy. But after this happened, during the night, he wasn't well. I was quite worried about him, and he hadn't been feeding properly over the first 10 days, but it hadn't really been picked up by the midwife. It was holiday time and the midwife kept changing each day, so there wasn't really good continuity. And I think probably that impacted on our ability to work out the story and to see what was happening properly with Alistair. So, as I said, he was sick in the night and he hadn't actually fed. So I knew that that wasn't normal. And in the morning, he screamed in a way that really worried me. So I got David to ring the midwife, who couldn't come out, but we were directed to the GP. Actually, we should have gone to the emergency. We should have gone to A&E straight away, but we didn't. We went to the GP and we realised Alistair was very unwell. And we were directed to our local children's ward, where he was treated as an emergency. We were very lucky. There was a consultant who had experience with heart babies. So he was given prostaglandin, and that in effect saved his life because it meant that he was able to survive long enough to be blue lighted to Guy's Hospital in London, where he was treated.
Right. So what I found interesting was the parallel between our stories. When we were talking yesterday, you knew way before he was diagnosed that something was wrong. And you kept saying something to the midwives, but nobody seemed to pick up on it.
I mean, I don't know, call it a mother's instinct. But yes, I was very, very anxious. It was my first baby. And I think I was too easily persuaded that the problem was, in fact, my anxiety rather than the problem was the baby.
Right, right. The same thing happened to me. They were treating me like I was an overprotective parent. And Alex was my second child, but they kept telling me, don't compare him to your first child. every child is different. He came 3 weeks early, and there were all of these excuses. So I found it interesting how you and I had a very similar experience where we knew in our hearts something was wrong, but the professionals were not agreeing with us. So after Alistair's heart defect was diagnosed, and it was very serious, hypoplastic left heart syndrome, so it wasn't something that could have been put off much longer.
It couldn't have been put off any longer.
Right. It's a miracle that he survived as long as he did.
Yes. Yeah. No, he collapsed. He was grey. He was limp. We were extremely lucky. And we're very lucky that the GP acted very quickly when we finally got to see somebody. And we, because we only live a few minutes away from our local hospital, we were able to drive. She said it was quicker than getting an ambulance.
Right.
So we jumped in the car and took him straight there.
Absolutely. Well, tell me what kind of support you had after the diagnosis. Because this was quite a while ago. We haven't said how old Alistair is.
He's 20. Well, he's almost 20.
Almost 20. So this was, you know, 2 decades ago, just about.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we arrived at the hospital, because we had to follow the ambulance, a lovely thing, just as we got out of the car, hugely worried, the ambulance driver gave us a little thumbs up so that we knew he was alive, which was lovely. And we got a huge amount of support from friends and family who were absolutely wonderful and looked after us, looked after Alistair when we needed it, looked after things at home. And also at that time, there was an organisation called ECHO, which is a parents group linked with Evelina Children's Hospital. And they were just setting up, and I became involved with them, so I was able to meet some other parents that way. But at the time, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have social media, so actually your book was hugely instrumental. It was the first time that I really connected, well, felt connected emotionally with other parents, because I read their stories, and I guess it made me feel not so alone.
Right. That was the whole purpose of the book.
Yeah.
And that's the whole purpose of this podcast, which is why I always end the show with reminding my friends, all of my listeners, you're not alone. I think for me, that was probably one of the worst parts of having a child with a heart defect. All of my friends had children who were healthy.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel connected with them in the same way anymore.
No.
And I couldn't have my child around other little children who were sick. It's very isolating.
It is very isolating.
And you definitely do feel alone. So, yeah, that was the whole purpose of putting the book together, was to let people know they weren't alone and also to give them hope. And I'd like to think that this podcast is another way that we are giving hope to people who are living with congenital heart defects, because we talk about everything. But it's so much fun for me today to talk to you. We are considered quote-unquote old moms since our children have made it to their second decade, which is really exciting, because when our children were diagnosed, we were not given a very hopeful outlook, were we?
No, we were given a statistic 50-50 chance of survival to 5. And that statistic just, it went round and round in my head. I just couldn't come to terms with it. I found that very difficult to hold in my head. And yes, the most important thing about the book, even though I did cry a lot when I read
it. I cried too.
Yeah, I did cry a lot. But yes, it did give me hope, because there are stories of heart survivors who were older, who had gone through the journey that we were just beginning. So yes, it gave me hope.
Yeah, well, good. That's what that book was supposed to do. And for any of you who are interested in the book we're talking about, it's called The Heart of a Mother. And if you go to babyheartspress.com, you can see what we're talking about. Well, let's talk about the greatest sources of information and support that you got when Alistair was young. And I know things are probably different now here in the UK, but way back when, 20 years ago or 18, 19 years ago, what were your greatest sources of information?
Definitely friends and family, like I said, Evelina Heart Organization. I did look online. I joined a parent chat group online, but yeah, I do think it was very isolating. It was hard to get the support that I needed, to be honest.
Texas Heart Institute were offering us a mechanical heart, and he said, no, Dad, I've had enough. Give it to someone who's worthy.
My father promised me a golden dress to twirl in. He held my hand and asked me where I wanted to go.
Whatever strife or conflict that we experienced in our long career together was always healed by humor.
Heart to Heart with Michael. Please join us every Thursday at noon Eastern as we talk with people from around the world who have experienced those most difficult moments.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
You are listening to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Last night, Helen, when we met face-to-face for the first time, we were talking about how our mental health as parents of children with chronic illnesses were treated when our children were young. So let's talk about why you feel that parents may need some assistance when it comes to our mental health.
Finding out your child is ill and ill in the long term is hugely traumatic. And even planned hospitalization is extremely difficult for parents and families. Yeah. So add on top of that an emergency hospitalization. It's very traumatic for the parent, and you end up focusing so much on what the child needs that it's very easy to forget your own needs.
Sure.
And often very well-meaning people, they're always asking, how is the child? Which, of course, that's important, and they want to know, and you want to fill them in, and your whole focus is on how the child is. But again, your needs can become forgotten in amongst all that. Also, not all people experience the hospital environment alike, so it's easier for some people, I think, to adapt to that environment than others. For me, it feels like a really alien environment, and especially as a mother of a young baby, I wanted to focus very much on nurturing the baby, making a cozy, friendly environment, and I experienced the hospital environment as something alien to me.
Right. I can totally relate to you because I was a teacher of the deaf, and I know you were a French teacher.
Yeah.
We're very accustomed to a classroom setting. The hospital is not anything like a classroom setting, and it is alien. I would agree with you. I think our husbands, who are both much more scientific, maybe didn't have the same feeling that we did. I know my husband didn't because he was a nurse. So being in the hospital for him was not as traumatic as it was for me. And I think maybe you experienced this.
Yeah, it's true. My husband works in a hospital. He was quite comfortable with being there.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he didn't want to be there. Obviously,
no.
It was traumatic for different reasons.
Right.
But he did feel kind of on his home territory.
Right.
Whereas for me, it wasn't even necessarily that I had experienced a different work environment. It was that basically, I just wanted to be at home.
Well, I think as moms, and this was your first child, so I can't even imagine this happening to my first child. At least I had been a mother. When I had Alex, he was my second child. So I knew what it was like to be a mother. I knew what it was like to bond with my baby.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things that you dream about, that you read about. For me, it took me a long time to be able to get pregnant and have my nine children. It was 5 years before we had a baby, and we had been trying for a long time and were very concerned that we had not gotten pregnant yet. With Alex, it was different because I'd already had a baby. I knew how to bond with my baby, but I knew something was wrong. And you knew something was wrong. So then going into the hospital, it's like our worst fears imagined. Because we already knew in our hearts that something was wrong, but everybody kept telling us, oh, no, they're fine. And we wanted to believe that. But being in a hospital, you're kind of slapped in the face with, no, you're right, something really is wrong.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think it's very common, from what I understand, for new parents to be anxious about their babies.
Sure.
And it is that idea that your worst fear has come true.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're going through a period of rapid adjustment because the reality in front of you is there's a complete mismatch between the reality that you're living and the reality that you've imagined.
Right.
And somehow you've got to close the gap.
Right.
Coupled with that, you're probably not sleeping.
Exactly, yeah.
So that has an impact. And fortunately, things have changed an awful lot now. But I remember expressing milk in a toilet. I was too shy at the time to ask where there was a facility to do that.
Oh, no.
And I know it's hard to believe now.
Right.
You know, now I can't imagine where I was then. As a young mother,
yeah.
But it was when Alistair was first admitted, he was in the local hospital and he was in the emergency room, and I knew I needed to express milk.
Mm-hmm.
I asked to borrow a pump, so I was given a pump to borrow, but I didn't know where to go with it. So
I
remember going into the toilet, and it just felt so sad. It felt so lonely.
Yeah.
And yeah, just extremely isolating.
Sure.
Not to mention unhygienic.
Yeah, I was lucky. But when I asked for a pump, like you did, because I had been nursing Alex, we had a room. They had a pumping room that she went into. But I remember going in there the first time, and I was always used to nursing my baby.
Mm-hmm.
I had never used a pump for Alex. I used a pump once or twice after I needed to for Joey, but I didn't like pumping. It's not very comfortable. And since I was a stay-at-home mom, I didn't really have to. But I remember the first time I pumped, just weeping.
Yes.
Because I was used to the smell of the baby. Now,
yes.
I had brought a blanket, and I was sniffing the blanket to try and help let my milk let down so that I could pump successfully. And tears were just streaming down my face because I wasn't supposed to be pumping. I was supposed to be nursing my baby.
Yes.
And it is a very isolating feeling. And I find it odd that we went through this, Helen, and nobody said to us, we really think you should see a counselor. Don't you find it strange that nobody really felt the need to tell us that it would be okay for us to get emotional support for what we were going through?
Yes. I really hope now that things have changed a little bit. But yes, I do find it strange. I know I felt extremely anxious. And I remember looking at the notes that had been written for Alistair. And there were notes in the margin that had been written by hospital staff that said, mother extremely anxious. Also, mother hearing impaired, not hard of hearing, mother hearing impaired. And mother very worried. And notes like that. And I couldn't believe they were about me.
And if they hadn't offered you help. No. It doesn't surprise me that they put those notes in there, because that would help anybody else coming to see the child, that they would know, oh, well, the mother is anxious.
Yes.
If she acts anxious with me, it's not that she doesn't trust me. It's that she's anxious. But why didn't they send somebody to help allay your fears, allay your anxiety? That's what I don't understand, because I imagine our babies can feel when we're anxious. And really, the hospital needs to treat the whole family, not just the baby. I mean, of course, the baby is of primary importance. However, we're going to be the baby's primary caregivers. And if we're in the hospital, as much as it sounds like both of us were, we're around the baby, and you would think that the medical staff would want to do something to reduce our anxiety. And they don't. So this is for all those people who are listening to my show, that we need to do something for those moms, because it is extremely anxiety provoking to be in the hospital, to be facing open heart surgery with your child, to be facing such an uncertain future. I mean, I knew with Joey, my healthy child, that his future was uncertain, but I never thought about his mortality. With Alistair, with Alexander, we had no choice but to think about their mortality.
No.
And that's not normal.
No, it's not. It's counterintuitive. And, you know, when you think, if anyone brought a needle near my baby, I would want to kill that person.
Sure. To protect
and then
your baby.
All the time when you're in the hospital environment, you're having to rationalize this fierce instinct to protect your child.
Right.
And tell yourself all the time, but actually, in this situation, this is what needs to be done. In this situation, this is what's got to happen. That's going to produce anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we experience a lot of trauma as mothers, and I don't really think that it's addressed in a healthy manner for us. Instead, we're made to feel overprotective, or they're writing notes about us being anxious in their reports to one another, and we don't even know about it. So what do you think has been the most challenging situation that you have faced as a heart mom?
Hard to identify the most challenging, because there's quite a lot of challenge.
I know, but, right?
So, the initial emergency was a big challenge. When Alistair was around 7, he was diagnosed with protein-losing enteropathy in addition to his heart condition. So yet again, we found ourselves in the consultant's room having that talk about his mortality. So that kind of triggered a lot of the anxiety that I'd had previously. And that was definitely a really big challenge. And then we were back into the situation of looking for support, because although it's a known side effect of the Fontan, PLE is relatively uncommon.
Right.
So we were then back into looking for support for him. That was very difficult.
Home Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
You were telling me yesterday when we got together that you took part in a research study at your local hospital. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that program was?
Yeah, in 2017, I participated in a parent public involvement and engagement focus group, and that was up in London. It's part of a collaboration between ECHO, the parent group that I mentioned before, and Southbank University in London. And so it was basically a group of parents who got together to share their experiences, and the group was facilitated by a researcher and it was recorded. And at the same time, my daughter Ellie went with me as well, and she took part in some activities for siblings. And this research project is ongoing, so it's still active now, and it aims to look at the impact of children's heart issues on the wider family and what can be done to help.
Right, which is exactly what we're talking about as far as the mental health of parents, but also that is a whole other area that needs to be examined, and that is, what is it like to be the sibling of somebody who is having multiple surgeries or having to go to the doctor regularly, or heaven help us, developing protein-losing enteropathy or some other kind of illness? We know that plastic bronchitis is another rare, and yet it happens, circumstance. Arrhythmias are not so rare. A lot of our Fontaners end up developing arrhythmias and might need a pacemaker or might need to have ablations. And so just because you have the Norwood, the Fontan, a bidirectional gland, that doesn't mean it's it.
No.
This is an ongoing, lifelong condition. And there will be situations in the future that the siblings will have to deal with as well. And I think that's very unusual, don't you?
Yes. To be honest, I don't know what went on in the siblings group, which is kind of a good thing because we were in different areas. Mm-hmm. But certainly when we were on our way home and Ellie and I were talking about it, I could tell that she was quite animated. There's a sense of relief at having met other people who were in her situation and also had fun with them, which was nice.
Which I think is lovely. I did an entire season talking with siblings.
Right.
And yeah. I loved those 13 shows that I did were so fabulous for me to get a chance to talk to the siblings. What was it like being raised with somebody who had a heart defect? And I was really touched by how sensitive, how empathetic these siblings were. Not that it was easy to be raised with a sibling with a heart defect, and they had to think about their sibling's mortality, or some of them at least were confronted with their sibling's mortality, which again, is not a typical situation for most siblings, but I do think that there's value to them knowing other siblings who are in that same circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think that you've learned as a long-time heart mom, which it feels good to say that we're long-time heart moms. What do you think that you've learned that you would like to share with somebody new?
I think I've learned that it's okay that I was worried. It's okay to be anxious. It was okay to tell other people that I felt like that, because for a long time I didn't really say that. And I've realized it's okay to be emotional in front of other people. It's only recently that I've really properly understood the importance, both for me and for the people around me, of looking after myself and paying attention to my own well-being.
Right.
So, yes, I think that that would be perhaps the most important thing that I would say to other people, which is not only is it okay to say that you're worried about things, but it's okay to look after yourself.
Right. I think if I were to tell a newly diagnosed heart mom anything, it would be, yeah, give yourself a break. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to make it a date. Even if you just want to have somebody in the house to watch the baby so you can go take a bubble bath, or so you can just have a nap. Because like you were saying, there's so much anxiety. I've had trouble sleeping at night. Did you sometimes have trouble sleeping?
Yes. But actually, I've just been reminded of a wonderful thing that your husband said to me today, which was a really good point. We were talking about this issue, and he said how on a plane, they tell you to pull down your own oxygen mask first before you try and look after somebody else.
Right.
And it's very easy to give that advice. And of course, I'm 20 years on now. And as a younger parent with an ill baby, I was a lot more vulnerable than I feel now. But I still think that was excellent advice. And it was a really good image because it's one that we're all familiar with. And it's very clear. It's an important thing.
Yeah. But I think you're so right that we need to address our own health as well. Because if we're healthier, and I'm talking about mental and emotional health, and maybe that's through reaching out. Now there's so many more avenues on the internet than there were 20 years ago. For me, 25, because my son is now 25, and we didn't even get online till he was 2 years old. We didn't even have internet. So for those newly diagnosed parents who are in their 20s right now, you probably don't even remember this, but it was very isolating back then because we didn't even have online services like you do now. But I would say, yes, you need to see after your own mental health, and that also there's nothing wrong with counseling.
Yeah.
Seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist or even doing group therapy. It sounds like ECHO is involved with helping families. Do you want to talk a little bit more about ECHO and what they do here in the UK?
Well, now, of course, it's a lot more developed as an organisation than it was. And there are all kinds of things going on, so activities and groups that children can join in with and young people. Again, it's often based on just having fun together, not necessarily sharing big things, but, you know, just having a nice time and treating yourself. So, yeah, they say that there's quite a lot more that can be things that can be joined in with than there were 20 years ago. I was going to say all that time ago.
Makes me feel so old, Helen. But you know what? How awesome that nowadays we can say, wait a minute. And the thing that's popping into my head is my son was young. We didn't have any of that.
No. And the other organization that helped me a lot, but I didn't get in touch with them till later on because I didn't know about them, was Little Hearts Matter.
Yes.
And they have helped hugely. They helped with doing applications for Alistair's DLA, Disability Living Allowance. They helped with his transition between primary and secondary school and information for teachers. Mm. And again, there are networks, and you can ring up and talk to somebody, which was really important.
They also have a lovely website, which has a lot of information as well.
Yes, yeah.
And now we have that. We have those websites that we can go to. Another one that's really good, and in fact, the organization that Jane Hunt and I started, which was called Milagros in Central Texas, has now been taken over by Mended Little Hearts. And Mended Little Hearts is all over the United States, and it sounds like they do a lot of what you're talking about. And they also help bereaved parents. They have a special program for bereaved parents, which I think is so necessary because that seems to almost be a taboo subject. They don't want to talk about what happens if one of those children pass away. And we know, unfortunately, there's a disproportionate percentage of our children who are going to not make it to that next birthday. Those people need support probably even more than we do.
Yes. And another side of that also is understanding when you are able to dip into knowledge about other people's situations, and for your own sake you need to take a bit of time out, and that has to be up to the individual. That has to be something that the individual decides in terms of what's right for them,
right?
Because there are times when we're able to be with and support others and times when we're not, and that's quite normal and quite fine.
I think it's easier for me now that Alex is 25 than it was when he was little, because I think it was still so fresh for me. Now it's not quite so fresh. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's a little easier for you to be supportive of other parents now that Alistair is in university?
Yes, it's certainly a bit more distant in the sense that he's been able to take on, I guess, some of the issues that we were holding for him. So there's a lot of information, you know, so it's been quite a big journey for him going into adulthood. Gradually he's found out more about his condition and in taking on his management of his own medical treatment, etc., and also learning to become his own advocate,
right?
And realizing sometimes that you have to fight for the treatment that you think is right for you. And fight for the system to meet your needs. So, yes, in some ways, him being able to take that on is a relief to me and takes a little bit of weight out of my relationship with him so that it can be perhaps a little bit easier.
Right. I feel like now I have more of an adult relationship with Alexander. Whereas before, I very much was the mama tiger, taking care of Alex and protecting him and trying to raise him to adulthood. Now that he's made it to adulthood, he goes to his appointments without me. He's taking care of himself and taking care of what needs to be done. I do feel a little bit of a sense of relief. But I think as far as like providing the support, it's just a little bit easier too, because I feel like we have a success story. We really are so lucky that he's made it this far when we were told that he probably wouldn't.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And for you, even more so, because with the PLE, that must have been a huge scare for you.
Yes. I mean, at the moment, Alistair's PLE is in remission. So obviously we don't know what the future holds. But yes, there is a sense of being just for however long, we don't know how long, but being able to put down that burden and just kind of breathe a little, live a little.
Yes, I love it. I love it. This time has just completely flown by. I have been waiting for 6 years to have you on my show because I knew I wanted you on my show early, and I was lucky enough to get David on the show. But with you being hearing impaired, working on Skype was not going to work. So I'm so happy that we could meet face to face and actually do this. So thank you so much for coming on the program today, Helen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
It has been so much fun. So that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today, my friends. Please consider becoming a patron of our program by visiting www.patreon.com/hearttoheart. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.